In your mind, where does your association with Sligo Rovers begin when you think back? Where does it start for you?
Well, I'm not sure. I think my sister brought me to a match in the Showgrounds. I don't know what her interest was. It wasn't really football. But she brought me to a match when I was only 10 in 1947. Sligo Rovers and Bohemians. No, Drumcondra. And from that I developed an interest. And in school holidays, different things, I'd cycle the 18 miles round from O'Connor to Sligo and when I was there. And so I suppose from that it developed. So I was coming down regularly. And it made you look like a kind of a rebel in a rural parish to be going down to the soccer matches, you know, at that stage, like, you know.
Why a rebel?
Well, it was all GA. And you were talking about this foreign game, like, you know, and the barracks game, like, from the British Army and that kind of thing, like, you know. So it was an unusual, like, I was the only one, I'd say, from the parish coming down to see football at the time.
And from that first Rovers Drumcondra match, were you hooked straight away or was it a gradual thing?
It's a gradual thing. I started coming down to them, like, and you met someone. I got to know Charlie Courtney at some stage, I'm not sure why. And, you know, it was nice to know someone there, and you got to know a few people when you were coming down. And, you know, it was just 18 miles from home. It was a nice cycle, and you kept in touch with it when you were at school, like, you know, anything that was on the radio. And what do you call them every Sunday night? The amount of quarter seven, what's the name? They used to have soccer survey every Sunday night. So you're glued into that, like, you know. So I suppose that's how it started, like, you know.
Did you play soccer yourself?
Badly. I'd say no. I don't say anything about it. But I know I was working in the north of Donegal in the early 60s. And we were messing around. Now, I never trained or anything, but you'd get an odd game, even though you weren't around a lot of the time. Like, you know, if they were short, someone to make up the side there. And we'd have the teams that you'd be playing with or playing against, you'd see an odd young fella that was about three times better than anyone else. And I'd be writing a note to Charlie to come up here. There's a fella who'd do very well at Sligo Rovers. And of course, the only merit that fella had, that he was three times better than people that had no merit at all. Like, you know, Charlie was very decent. He never told me to stop or anything, but he never sent anyone to look at him. You know, so that was the early days.
And in terms of being involved in administration at Rovers, where did you get, at what stage did you get sucked into that side of things?
There was a man here in town, at the mayor of town, Jimmy McGoldrick, and I was friendly with him, and he had a newspaper shop here in town, and he knew I was a strong supporter or visitor to the Showgrounds, like, and that, and he had got aware of a move that was afoot to get Sligo Rovers out of the Showgrounds, and that to be a centre for riding, for horse riding and show jumping and that kind of thing, like, you know. And that, and the deed was up, that was 1965, 66. The deed was up in 68, and it wasn't going to be renewed, you know. And I remember he had a certain amount of information, background information from legal stuff that he got his hands on. And he gave me copies of it. And I remember with Albert Higgins down on the farm in Dunelly, we were baling hay and telling Albert about this, like. And Albert was 10 years younger than me. I'd been mid-20s that time. He was only a teenager, like. But he told me about the supporters club and to come in. And you know, they'd be very interested. And they were in Willie Kelly's barbershop, like, you know, that meeting there where the waiting room still is, like, you know, there. And Willie was chairman and Brendan Byrne was secretary. So it kind of started there. And they were very interested in this aspect. And we kind of moved to do it. Now, we got Rovers interested, but they didn't have any money to buy the ground. So from that we got on, and it's a long story now of developing the ground and taking it over. But we succeeded I joined myself and I don't know who it was, Martin Keaveney, I think, joined the management committee in late 66, and 66, and we're there in 67, yeah. So we're there for the start of the professional end of it, but I hadn't an awful lot of, then my interest was the one topic, like, you know, the ground. And by 68, we had the ground bought. We had the Vernon estate in it, which is the part the pitch is on. And then it was easy to buy the other one, because one was kind of entangled with the other, like, you know. So we got the two, got the both sides of the ground for $2,500 each at the time. Which was
$2,500.
$2,500 each, but no, each now, $5,000 altogether for the Campbell and the Vernon estate, like, you know, so.
In terms of a community purchase, that must be one of the best pieces of value going in the history of Sligo Town.
I would like to think it was valuable anyhow, like, you know. But then the ground, we went down without knowledge of our own solicitor. Not that there was anything wrong with our own solicitor, but the solicitor dealing for the Mrs. Chadwick from Red Hills in Surrey that owned the ground was an unusual man, and he didn't like other solicitors. So we went down on spec, and we succeeded in convincing him that he should sell the ground, give him a guarantee, we'd give a lease to the Show Society, like, you know, and that. And we had fellas like Albert then that was on both the Show Society and Rovers Committee, like, you know.
And were you in those negotiations trying to persuade this guy to give you the showgrounds?
Myself and Brendan Byrne were the ones to put it together, and the secretary and the chairman, John Fallon and Jimmy Gibbarton, came with us, so that was the delegation.
So how did you persuade him?
Well, Brendan had everything on the zoning from the county council, and we had a thing from auctioneers showing the value of land, that with the zoning it was only agricultural land value. But it was obviously worth more than agricultural land. So we went to a thing that was maybe twice agricultural land value at the time, you know. And we told him, you know, we were straight with him. And he said he liked our approach. And he sent us down to have lunch on him and to come back in the late afternoon. And that he'd have been in touch with the thing, or he'd have tried to get in touch. When we come back, he told us he was prepared to accept it. That wasn't the end of the story. There was a lot of little twists and things after that that had taken a long time, do you know, to get into. But the worst of it then is Paddy Moran, of course, was a great man to have around the ground. He was a great man for raising money as well as everything else, like, you know. And I brought Paddy into the ground, so I just say I contributed more than anyone because I brought in Paddy Moran, and he contributed more than anyone. So as the person that brought him in, you know, to the great thing. But Paddy on several times when we were in trouble, and that was why on the third time we nearly lost the ground through losing to the banks, like, you know, that we decided that no, we'd put it into a trust, and got enough money to take Sligo Rovers out of the trouble they were in to pay off the bank. And we bought the ground and put it into a trust owned by the community. And we were just the trustees. And that's the start to what's there now, which was probably a good thing. I doubt if the ground would be there if it wasn't put into a trust.
What year are we talking about there when it became part of a trust?
Part of a trust was 76, 1976. We started it now in 74. And how we managed it was the bank, we started the trust, and a lot of people paid in, £1 a week people were paying, a lot of people paid £500 straight in, and we had that as dry money. So we were able to convince the bank, we can give you so much money and we'll pay you so much a week. And this was going on for a few months, so they were happy to deal with us, you know. And Sligo Rovers were happy because they hadn't to worry about their money, what they owed the bank. So they were starting off with a clean sheet. And by the time we got the legal thing right for to pass it over, it was 1976. So that's when it was transferred over to the trustees.
Well, being part of the team that got the showgrounds to become part of the community is one of your obvious highlights that you'd look back on. What, when you think back on your Sligo Rovers Association, what are the other highlights for you that come to mind instantly?
Well, the development of the ground is obvious, like, you know, and like, it's just one of the nicest grounds in the country. And like the present committee are doing fantastic work, as you're well aware. They're well on their way to drawing down big grant aid and doing a lot of work themselves on making it one of the finest grounds in the country. Well, it's one of the finest as it is, I think, looking at all the other grounds, like, you know, but the finest, I'd say, without any, you know, that it's full ownership by the community. It's a great thing for the community to own a ground like that, like, you know, and it does give life to the ground itself. Like, there'll always be a club if there's always a ground, you know. And what, there's no other club in the country can boast of anything like the same thing, like Shamrock Rovers does, because the county council have taken them over as a godchild, kind of, you know. But other ones, there's Bohemians probably get a grant as well, but they have sold part of the ground that I'm sure they regret now. We resisted at all times before it became a part of the trust, and certainly after it. There was every year there was people trying to get things, surely over the boom time, that we were a hindrance to progress. The fact that you had an old crowd there that wouldn't see progress at all, and the ideal thing was to build on the ground and move the showgrounds to Ballysadare or Ballygawley or somewhere, like, you know, and that. But that would have been a tragedy if that had happened. When you look at it now, when you look at the developments that the present committee have planned, you know, yeah, and the development that have taken place, and it gave a great thing for great people, you know, to be involved in. Like, the committee, we had great people on the development committee, like, you know, Kevin and Noel Scott and all the lads like that, you know, working on it. And different things then, that now we have Vincent Lally come in. They look at all the developments in Pioneer, like, the committee themselves doing things. Seamus Cummins, that was honoured with the other night, he was responsible for, well, part of the responsibility for building the original dressing rooms that became obsolete then, but compared to what was in it, they were state of the art, like, and the Jinx's Avenue stand, you know, and things like that. And Seamus then was there as a chairman at a time that was very difficult. There was a lot of politics within Sligo Rovers Committee, and Seamus's diplomatic approach, like, was able to steer the club through a very difficult time then, like, you know. And so there were great people like that coming along. Paddy Moran, of course, was the best of all. Like, you know, I really look on Paddy as a kind of a saint, because he could do anything, and he had the ability to develop money and develop to bring people along with them, things like that. You know, it was. So you met some great people in it, but you, those people involved and what they're doing. And, like, if you take it, Sligo Rovers now, we have people that give out about Sligo Rovers, we have people that are mad about Sligo Rovers, but they're all talking about Sligo Rovers. You wouldn't go into any canteen anywhere in the country now during the season that there isn't talk. You know, even the 7-0 draw that was all talk, the fact that they're able to bounce back, things like that. But it's given a great focus for people. And, like, there's men and women now, and to see women's football there. What I always... And it never happened in my time there in management or anything else, that we always tried to get a good underage structure and to get a thing. And we're always prohibited with the kind of structure that was in football here in the time. Now look what they're doing there, like, you know, with the academy and with what they're doing with the girls' football. That's improving all the time. Obviously, things have started, like, you know. Isn't it great to see it, you know, when there's so many negative distractions for youth? To see the number of people that are in it there, both the interest and the involvement and everything, in a community-owned setup, like, you know, it's very satisfying. Not for me, for everyone in the town, everyone involved, like, you know.
You were chairman of Sligo Rovers for several years in the 1990s. I'm guessing you held several different club officer positions. I don't know if you were secretary or treasurer at different stages. You were deeply involved for a long time, and you were the club's representative on the FAI National Board for a good number of years in Dublin. So you would go to the capital to bat for Sligo Rovers, and from memory, I think that was a challenging role to have. I'm guessing from time to time to speak up for the Western Seaboard clubs.
Oh, it was, and we made use of that. Well, it was more because when I joined it first around 1990, I was 20 years there, like, and I was 12 years on the board, like, you know, and I was on the finance committee and the audit committee before there was trouble. I hasten to add. But we had a great team here. I was never secretary. I was chairman and vice chairman and joint treasurer at times. Mary McGowan for a lot of it. And we're very lucky. Mary, first-class person. No one knows football and the league and rules and anything. And no one is more diplomatic, you know, in getting them. But when you were there and you had a great team behind you, Fergal there and different ones, you know, there, they were totally backing you. You know, it was a great thing. But when we went up first, you were being thrown crumbs by the FAI. But we changed that. Do you know?
How did you change that?
Well, we had it first of all, we stood up to it. Our first thing was when they were looking for, they offered a club that was transferring an amateur player with the rules at the time didn't allow any fee, but they decided that allow a fee. So we fought that for a number of years. And I remember at times saying, well, the rules, you know, trying to stand to the rules and being told, you don't worry about the rules. We'll change the rules if you want to suit it. But we were so strong there, not just me, but there was backups from different committees and things, that we didn't allow them to walk on us. And we got to a stage that we were so successful in that they didn't try to walk on us. You know, after time. But we still never fell out. We were very popular at league level. Anything we ever went for that we needed the support of other clubs, we got it. You know, while I was there, I was never beaten on a vote for anything except once. Ollie sidetrapped me onto the finance committee once.
This is Ollie Byrne of Shelburne.
Yeah. He caught me by surprise, like, you know, and got. But he was very quick to propose me then for the international committee, you know, for a representative, which I wasn't interested in because it involved a lot of travel. And as I was doing between forestry and everything, I had enough travel, you know, that I was away from home enough without any more. So I only stayed a year on that. But I know he was trying to get something through the finance committee, you know, that I didn't fully agree with. I was friendly with Ollie, but there were things you wouldn't agree with Ollie. And he knew I'd be opposed to it, like, and I'd be a strong voice opposed to it. So he had a meeting and decided that, no, the finance committee, our representative from the league, should be all accountants, you know. And so he had canvassed a lot of people and sold the idea to them, like, you know. So to the only time in the 20 years that I was ever, any time that I was ever beaten on a thing, but I was caught by surprise. The league had two or three representatives on the finance committee, like, you know, two, I think it was, and I didn't get the two. That was the only time. I was waylaid other times, but I was never defeated. Do you know, even when there was only small representation from league at AGMs and that, I was supported by the rest of the 56-man council. So it was, at least, they didn't mind people standing up to you if you were constant about your views and straight on them, like, you know.
I'm wondering, Ray, as an administrator, whether it was locally here in Sligo during your time on the Rovers committees or in Dublin, batting with or against the FAI board as the need arose, were you able to enjoy football, or did the administrative part consume you? Were you still able to enjoy a match and sit in the stand and actually enjoy the reason we're all there?
Well, as long as the result was right, and as long as there was a good gate and there was money, you know, I suppose your priorities was the thing. Because the big thing when you were there was the Friday. There had to be wages every Friday, like, and as wages kind of increased, it became difficult. When we changed to the cooperative in 88 and were kind of out of football, there was no money to start football or anything then. Lucky enough, the ground was already and things, so that wasn't in any danger. But it was then we started, remember, with the young fellas around the town, great young fellas. We didn't win a match, but we were never beaten too much. And Jerry Mitchell, Rustam, and David Pugh managed it for pittance, like, you know, the team, the turnover for the year was €9,000. £9,000 was it then, you know. And but then it got up. But I remember the Friday. I thought Fridays came three or four times a week, because you just bred, had a breath at lunchtime on Friday. God, I've met that when. The next Friday was a choppy again, like all over again. And when the gate was good, you saw things going, you were working into the second half, you saw 20 minutes, much like I'm seeing now, because I'm tied up, I only see 20 minutes of a lot of games, like, you know. But as long as things were going well, and the results were all right, and you got to look at it, I enjoyed it then, you know, because your priorities were different.
Well, I'm thinking as I'm listening to you there, some things haven't changed, because we're chatting here in 2024, and this week the Dundalk manager John Daly has revealed that his players haven't been paid yet this week. So that precarious nature for League of Ireland clubs still continues to a degree.
Well, it does. But I want to say this about Sligo, for every group that was in it, and it was a miracle every Friday. But from the 88, when the co-op took over there, there never came a week when the players weren't paid. How it was managed is a different thing altogether, like, you know. But I never saw a time when they weren't paid.
You're still involved with the club to this day, and now you've been appointed club president. What does that honour mean to you on a personal level?
Well, in a way, I'm kind of overwhelmed with it, like, you know, is that... I don't take honours easy. I'm kind of a bit overwhelmed with them and that, but it is a great honour that you be. I've been out of football for a long time, and that, you know, I'm in touch still with them, like through the trustees. I've been in touch, and we're, you know, but I haven't been on management now for years, like, in that, and I haven't been on the FA. I'm a life member of the FAI, but I haven't been on any committee on it for over 15 years now, like, you know. But it is a great honour that, you know, that I look on it and that, and I'm a life member of the FAI, so, like, between the two of them, I'm quietly very chuffed about it, but I'm not a big one for blowing my thing on it.
I understand that you're a modest guy, you're a kind of a behind the scenes man rather than a front of house. That's the way you liked to be.
Behind the scenes, you know, and I don't like, I'd keep away from publicity unless it's for, you know, that was when you're chairman, that you had to be there to prove things and to be out of things. But I'm an awful lot happier in the background and, you know, helping out with the...
But you still have a great passion for the club. You're still a supporter.
Actually, the club, you couldn't in Sligo but have a passion for the club. Like, you know, it's a huge thing in nearly everyone's thing that I'd say other people couldn't understand, like, you know. But it has been a big part of one's life, in time-wise and interest-wise and everything, like, you know. And, you know, if you go down the town and you run into someone, you know what you'll be talking about, you know. And that, like, you know. And so, like, from that, it has been a big part. And to be, you know, honoured like that, you have to take it, you know, that I wouldn't say much about it, but you have to be really a bit chuffed, you know. And I am. And I'm very grateful